Welcome to the Advisor Pact Monthly session. This is Mark Little. The Advisor Pact Monthly program is for advisors and teams who have decided and committed to delivering truly comprehensive financial services. This is a program to help teams develop the skills and develop the deliverables and develop the resources to add tremendous client value delivering comprehensive financial services. I'm Mark Little. Each month we get together here and we address issues that you have submitted prior to this session. It's very easy to submit a question to this session. Just get your question to us at least 24 hours before the session and we'll make sure to cover it each month. I want to give you, from among the questions that were submitted this month, I have selected three. So I wanted you to see the questions we're going to be dealing with today. I select questions based on what I feel are issues that will help the most numbers of you that are in the program. So we're all trying to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, not just at any level, but at a level that is truly remarkable enough that your clients receiving these services will remark about these services to everyone that they know. I mean, the whole point is to deliver at a level that is so high that all of your clients tell everybody they know and love and care about to come talk to you and your team about their money. So these are the questions that we're dealing with this month. Let me get to the first question. So I'm new to the Advisor Pact Monthly program. What are the first few things I should do? Well, I'm going to go through what are traditionally the first three steps. But I will point out this question implies that you have not gone through and looked at any of the previous monthly sessions for this program. One thing that I encourage you to do that's kind of above and beyond the traditional first few steps that we recommend is to go back and really dive deep into the content that you have access to in this program. Each month, we deal with questions that are burning questions from trusted advisors, but also questions that have been passed along to us through the trusted advisor from the team. That would be questions from your administrative manager, question from your subject matter experts. We deal with all kinds of questions. And the first thing I really recommend you do is start going back through these monthly sessions and listening to them. So you can download them in an MP3 format onto your phone, and you can listen to them while you're driving, just any spare time, when you're out walking the dog or washing the dishes, whatever the case, you can go back and listen to the all the things that we talk about that are really important issues to advisors who are committed to delivering truly comprehensive financial services. So we recommend the order in which I recommend you go through these monthly sessions is in reverse order. So you're on this session today. I don't recommend you go back to the beginning and move forward to this section. To this session. What we recommend is that you start with today's session and then move backward in time. That's the most current content. The older you get on any of these sessions, things change over time. And so the most relevant content is the most recent content. So we recommend that you go through reverse order. But let's answer the question. So what are the first few things that that an advisor should do as you enter this program? So let's take the baseline. Let's define where you're at currently. Everybody in this program, the one thing that you have in common is you are fully committed to someday delivering truly comprehensive financial services. So what I'm about to say is these are the first three steps once you've decided you're going to begin delivering truly comprehensive financial services. The first step is to get your team on board. We want to make sure that everybody currently working with you is on the same page as you. So that means really agreeing upon what does comprehensive financial services mean and how's it going to be delivered. So this means looking at your team the way it currently exists. You may just have an assistant. You may not have anybody on your team currently. But one thing we're going to recommend that you do is to begin immediately building your team. And I'll go over that in just a minute. But to get on the same page, we recommend that you have everybody on your team go through the Kate Wilson case study. That's the quickest, easiest way to stimulate discussion internally amongst your team about the services that you're about to deliver. In the Kate Wilson case study, I slowly and thoroughly walk through the logic path of what comprehensive financial services is, how to deliver it, although I cover it at a very high level, but there's enough tactics in the Kate Wilson case study to stimulate much discussion internally on what to, you know, how to implement this. And we cover what the value is to the clients. You know, why even bother? Why should an advisor deliver truly comprehensive financial services as opposed to one or two key services? Most financial advisors that you're competing with out there are delivering money management, or perhaps money management and financial planning, or perhaps estate planning and tax planning. Many of you in this program are tax accountants. So in the Kate Wilson case study, I lay out a case where not every client is seeking comprehensive financial services. However, those clients who are seeking comprehensive financial services, that's to say they're seeking someone to take a lot of this burden off of their hands on a more comprehensive basis, of those clients, and there are millions of them out there, they are disaffected. They claim they cannot find an advisor anywhere to deliver deliver financial services at this level. They claim they cannot find advisors who are willing or able to deliver comprehensive financial services and take the burden of their financial affairs to a great extent off of their hands. And so the Kate Wilson case study lays all that out. I recommend everybody on your team go through that. It's free. Establishing compensation for the financial services that you're going to be providing, that's the second step. And then finalizing the profile of the client that you serve best so that you and your team can target, you know, exactly who you are going to invite to come work with you. So let me start at the beginning. So the Kate Wilson case study, it's found if you go to trustedadvisortoolkit.com on the homepage, is the Kate Wilson case study. Anybody can join the Kate Wilson case study. Takes about a week to complete. We encourage everybody, it's self-paced, but we encourage everyone in the Kate Wilson case study to complete the study within 30 days or less. And it's free. So just encourage everybody on your team to go through that case study, and then they'll have a full understanding of what it is that we're doing here. And then that's a great foundation, a great launching pad for discussing how to deliver. This is on the toolkit, Trusted Advisor Toolkit. Another thing I will just comment upon, because some of the things I'm going to be covering today relate to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. In the Advisor Pack monthly program, in this program that you're in, this program was actually designed for advisors who are not quite ready for the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, and or advisors who are newer to the business, or advisors who just don't, are on a waiting list to join the toolkit. So if ever you want to know more about the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, you can certainly send us a question about that, and we'll get back with you one-on-one. But for today, I just want to point out that while the Kate Wilson case study is on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, you don't need to join the toolkit or log into the toolkit you don't have to pay anything or join the toolkit to get access to the Kate Wilson case study. That's my only point here. So the second step is to establish your compensation. Now, I just want to make a few quick points about this. We have talked about this in past sessions, and if you have more questions about this, which advisors tend to have a lot of questions about setting fees and setting compensation for these services, but the first step actually in the compensation question or establishing what you're going to charge your clients for truly comprehensive financial services, the first step is really to begin the process of inviting subject matter experts on your team. It's really a team approach to compensation. So either you're going to wrap truly comprehensive financial services into your services as a financial advisor, and the client will pay you, in essence, a single simple fee, or you're going to do your part coordinating and organizing comprehensive financial services and then delegating the oversight out to the other members on your team. And then those members, those subject matter experts on your team, are going to bill the client directly fee for service. So it's kind of two different business models. Our firm, just so you know, we bill the client a single simple fee, and we pay the subject matter experts to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So we collect the money, we pay the subject matter experts. But the other model, where you as an advisor charge for your job in organizing and coordinating comprehensive financial services, and then the subject matter experts bill the client directly fee for service for what they're doing, that's what most advisors tend to do. So I don't really have a horse in that race. And I think it's easier for the client to pay one single simple fee from me. But in essence, to get to the compensation level under either of those two business models, you have to have a sense of what your subject matter experts are going to charge. Either what they're going to charge you, and then you have to set your compensation to include those costs, or you need to be upfront and fully disclosed to the client and tell the client, here's what I'm charging, but to give them set the expectation on an average annual basis of what the entire costs are going to be if your subject matter experts are charging the client directly fee for service. So on this compensation question, we begin by having you establish your team. Now, there are great subject matter experts out there. We have covered in the past how to approach bringing in subject matter experts, skilled and experienced subject matter experts, to provide oversight over your client's financial affairs. But if you have further questions on this, submit them on future monthly sessions, and we'll cover it in even more detail. But for today, I just want to basically point out that there are five subject matter experts, and you should start acquiring them. This is the sequence that we recommend that you acquire them. But the point is, reach out and begin the process of inviting subject matter experts on your team to provide oversight over your ideal client's financial affairs. And even if you haven't invited these individuals formally onto your team, you can begin conversations with skilled local tax accountants, money managers, financial planners, estate planning attorneys, insurance, non-commissioned insurance professionals, in other words, fee for service. But even before you formally invite these people onto your team, you can have a conversation and should have a conversation about, you know, what it will cost to deliver these services behind the scenes. And then that's how you can help establish your own compensation, because at the very one of the very first questions is whether you're going to include these subject matter experts' compensation in within your fee, or if they're going to charge clients fee for service. You just need to be aware of what is the cost to the client on an annual basis, so that you're getting it into your head. What, one way or the other, this is going to cost the client a certain amount, and you're trying to get a handle on that first. So invite five subject matter experts on your team, get a sense of what they're going to charge to provide the oversight the way we teach it. And as a team, and I've discussed this on past sessions, so I'll let you go back and listen, but I recommend that you have these five subject matter experts establish your client deliverables. So the first question is going to become, what is it that clients are going to receive for whatever they're paying us combined? So as a team, we're charging the client a certain amount of money. What does the client get for that? And so you can sit down with your subject matter experts and begin creating this checklist of items, which defines the services you're going to be providing to clients across all these five areas of personal finance. And just a note, for those of you that are on the waiting list for the toolkit, these client deliverables we have already established on the toolkit. But I never say that you can't do this exercise on your own. You certainly can. That's exactly how I did it in the early years back in the year 1999 and the year 2000. I sat down with my subject matter experts. I said, look, in the area of tax, financial planning, estate planning, insurance, and money management, you know, what are the lists of things that have to be done so that nothing falls through the cracks and we're addressing all the opportunities that clients have with their money, and we're being proactive and so forth. So my subject matter experts established our client deliverables, and you can do the same. Just so you know, on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we have 10 client deliverables across these five areas of personal finance. So there's 10 client deliverables, which I share with clients. And it's in our agreements with the clients that we're going to deliver these 10 things. But supporting those 10 client deliverables, we have a list of checklist items which have to be done internally by all my subject matter experts annually in order to consider these 10 client deliverables to have been accomplished for each client. And so we have 142 deliverables checkpoints which support the 10 client deliverables. And those 142 deliverables checkpoints are what are assigned individually to each of the five subject matter experts on an annual basis to deliver on our promises to our client. This is the service that we provide. So if you're on the waiting list for the toolkit, you know, we'll give that to you. But I can, if you're younger in your career, newer in the business, or not ready for the toolkit, you know, if you're not going to be using the toolkit, don't let that stop you. You can do it exactly the way I did it. Matter of fact, that's one of the premises of the Advisor Pack Monthly program, is to kind of unpack the toolkit and figure out how to manually create what we've done there. And that's one of the primary purposes of the Advisor Pack Monthly program, is just to pull the curtain aside and let you see how we developed all this so you can start immediately. So then the next step is, as Trusted Advisor, once you've got your team focused on what they're going to deliver, you've established specific deliverables, you've established whether you're going to charge one fee and then all the subject matter experts are going to be paid by you, or the other way around, wherever you and everybody else on your team are going to charge fee for service. These are all the things that precede setting your compensation. Once you've got all that in place, then you can sit down and establish what your compensation is going to be. And before I move on to the next third thing that you need to do, now that you've made the decision to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, I just want to make a few three notes about compensation before we move on here. First is that I want you to realize and accept that your compensation, to a great extent, is a matter of confidence. So what you charge is really related to how confident you are in what you're doing. So we know from having worked with advisors like you since 2002, I mean, I've been in the business 30 years, built my own firm, still manage clients. But in 2002, we began working with other advisors like you. And advisors who have a low level of confidence about what they're doing tend to set lower fees. And advisors who have a higher level of confidence set higher fees. So it's not related to the services near as much as it is related to your confidence. And I would just further note that most advisors set their compensation too low. And it's really not a good situation where if you get in there and set your compensation and you set it too low, then you have to come back as your confidence increases over time and increase your fees. That's a brutal situation. You want to avoid that if at all possible. So what I'm encouraging you to do is get your confidence high now and set your compensation high now. And then make a commitment to implement and get your team put together and establish these deliverables as fast as possible. So rather than set your fee low and then incrementally on a stair step, increase it as you build your team and increase your and establish your deliverables, I'm recommending to set your, it's better for the client and it's better for you. If you increase your confidence now, set your fee high now, and don't, and then avoid the situation where you need to increase your compensation down the road. It's harder on the clients. They don't understand why am I being asked to pay more down the line. So get your confidence high now. And I will also point out that on the toolkit, at least the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, of all the advisors using the toolkit, because we track it, more than half charge more than $20,000 per year per client. So, and a handful charge between $40,000 and $50,000 per year. And this is for the same deliverables. So on the toolkit, we have 10 client deliverables supported by 142 deliverables checkpoints, which are accomplished annually by our five subject matter experts for every client. So how is it that some advisors are charging $20,000 a year for that and some, and other advisors are charging $40,000, $50,000 a year for the same services? Because on the toolkit, we are actually making the assignments for these 142 deliverables checkpoints directly to the subject matter experts on our system. So all these clients are receiving, in essence, the same services. So why some are paying $20,000 and some are paying $50,000? Well, it's confidence of the advisor. So I'm just encouraging you, get your confidence high, put your track shoes on, make it a commitment to get these deliverables in place, get your subject matter experts formally invited to your team, and begin delivering at a high level from the beginning. And just hold your subject matter experts accountable to delivering at whatever level you choose, 20, 25,000, 35, 40,000, whatever you choose. This, you have just in essence raised the stakes, and you've made a decision on behalf of your subject matter experts that they are going to be delivering at a substantially higher level. You've got your A team playing their A game. So setting your compensation high just confirms and formalizes your commitment to hold your team to a higher standard. And that's all I'm saying. And then the third step is to finalize your ideal client profile. So what is an ideal client profile? Many advisors have these things. They're just way too informal. What I'm recommending is that you sit down and thoughtfully establish point by point using bullet points what is the profile of the client that you serve best, and that then you only invite individuals into your ideal client community if they meet this profile. So for advisors who do have an ideal client profile, they often, it's almost a wish list. Like, this is just a profile of the client we like. We recommend you sit down and think about your top three clients that you enjoy working with the most and profile them. And I would propose that on every ideal client profile that you're going to, every draft that you create is going to have one item in common, and that is that you work with financial delegators. And I'll show you an example of an ideal client profile here in a minute, but there need to be all the elements of what you feel is the profile of the client you serve best, and then only accept those clients who meet that profile into your ideal client community. And I'll show you when we get to the example, but you need to include a financial component somewhere in the profile so as not to embarrass individuals who don't have enough money to pay your compensation. So you're setting your compensation, and now you're sitting down and establishing your ideal client profile. And, you know, what if an individual or a family meets every element of your profile, the subjective components, but doesn't have enough money to compensate you at your minimum rate. So you will, I'll show you in the example, but you need to put some sort of a descriptor of the of your ideal client profile as to the, how much money they have or how, you know, the ability to pay a certain fee, so as not to get all the way to a meeting with you only to discover that they don't have enough money to pay your fee. And I know a lot of advisors hesitate to put a financial component in their ideal client profile and then show it to potential clients because they're afraid it will turn off clients when they see that maybe your minimum is $25,000 per year. But I will I can tell you with authority, having done this for so long now, that clients who meet your profile are not going to be turned off by that. As a matter of fact, it's just looking through and checking the box. They're going through all the bullet points of your ideal client profile, and they get to that one, and they just move right past it. They go, okay, that's understandable. And you know, if they have enough money and they meet your profile, they're going to look at that financial component in your profile and have no problem with that. They're going to look at that and say, yeah, that's me. You need to, in this finalizing your ideal client profile, once you establish it and as you're developing it, I encourage you to bring your team in. So when I say team, you may laugh. You may say, well, there is no team. It's just me right now. Well, that's fine. Then that's your team. You still have people in your life that you respect their opinion, your mentors, people in your family, people who are close to you that you seek out for advice. I'm just saying team loosely, people that you respect. Sit them down and share this ideal client profile that you're developing with them and get their input, because you might get some valuable input or some suggestions for other profile items to add to your profile as you're talking to others that are close to you that understand your business. What I recommend is that you explain to your team, because up until now, I'm not sure what your business model has been up until now, but I'm kind of projecting you into my situation. I was, in essence, trained. I worked for a Wall Street-based firm years ago, back in the 80s. That's my introduction to this industry. And we were trained not to turn away money. So if you had a client who had some money, you figured out a way to accept that client into your community of clients and take their money and invest their money for them. So I don't know that that's exactly how you've been operating up to this point, but I think there's a new game in town. The minute you are making a commitment to deliver comprehensive financial services, you have some new objectives that you need to share with your team. And one is, I would propose that you explain to your team that your new goal is to create a community of these ideal clients. In other words, individuals who meet this profile. And that you will then, ever after you finalize this ideal client profile, anybody that you're currently working with who doesn't meet this profile is going to immediately be labeled as a non-ideal client. Now, it's not that they're not good people. It's not that they haven't been loyal to you and vice versa over the years. It's not that you're going to politely disengage immediately from any of these people. It's just to make it clear to your team. On this side of the line, we have ideal clients. They meet this profile. On this other, and we're going to deliver truly comprehensive financial services to that community of ideal clients. And then on this other side of the line are the non-ideal clients. And it's important for your team to know and distinguish that, because your team is going to need to know, where's the list of people that we're going to pull out all the stops and deliver ideal client service? You know, where's the list of people that we're going to deliver truly comprehensive financial services? And then what are we going to deliver to everyone else? So that's why I recommend that you sit down and, after you've established your ideal client profile, explain this to your team. Explain that we have a new goal. We're going to create a community of ideal clients who meet this profile. Everybody else that we work with is going to be considered a non-ideal client. They're going to receive substantially less service, and we have to discuss what that's going to look like. And by the way, if you have a question about that in the future, you can submit that in future months, and we can talk about what should the service be for a non-ideal client if you retain them. And And that your ultimate goal is to work only with ideal clients, so that not today and maybe not tomorrow, but at some point in the future, if it's your goal, I recommend you share with your team, someday all of us will only be working with a community of ideal clients. It'll be easier, it'll be more profitable, and these will be the people that we work with best anyway. And all the other clients, we will somehow slowly over time politely disengage or sell that book of business or something. So finalize and then consider accepting only ideal clients from this day forward. This is what I did. Many advisors choose not to do this. Some advisors don't understand the wisdom of this. Why would we ever turn away a client that's got money? But I can make a very compelling case for you how you'll increase your revenue quicker and you'll simplify your life. And at the same time, you're building your ideal business and moving towards your ideal life. You're rapidly, more quickly putting all that in place than if you accept ideal clients and continue to accept non-ideal clients. So I'm recommending that you consider accepting only ideal clients from this day forward. And that's for those of you, that's if you're very well capitalized. So when I did this, I had money, you know, I had my own money. I had money that I had set aside over the years. I could afford to accept only ideal clients from day forward. And in part, that worked because I never disengaged from non-ideal clients until after I had acquired a new ideal client. So I made sure that the revenue, you know, we didn't release any revenue, and we didn't refer non-ideal clients to other advisors outside of the firm until after we had acquired an ideal client to replace that revenue. But whatever the case, this is the way I did it, and we've been working with advisors since 2002, and those advisors who are capitalized well enough to make the decision to accept only ideal clients from this day forward, those are the advisors that increase their revenue and achieve their ideal business more quickly than advisors who are accepting non-ideal clients as well. And then finally, if you are going to be accepting and continuing to work with non-ideal clients, whether it's your existing non-ideal clients or whether you're going to consider working as you acquire clients with both non-ideal clients and ideal clients, the mistake that I see advisors make is they have too many services that they say, well, for certain clients, you know, we can offer assets under management. With other clients, we can do a financial plan and charge for that. We also, you know, and you might have different services for different levels and different types of clients. That's all very confusing to the public. And one thing that we've noticed is the advisors that build their businesses the most quickly are those that just have one or two very starkly contrasted, as in black and white, different services. So if you just have one or two services, you'll grow your business more quickly, as opposed to having a menu of all these different ways you could work with a client, including commissions on products and things that, when you start laying it out, represent, you know, several different ways to work with clients. That tends to confuse clients, slow them down. This is the client that hears all that and says, let me think about this. So here's what do I mean when I say two starkly contrasted offers. I'm suggesting either just one offer, which is option A, and that's all you do. That's the decision to only work with ideal clients going forward. Or if you are going to work with non-ideal clients, just have a second, single, simple second option as an offer to work with non-ideal clients, or what we call survival clients, which is another point. I mean, you may not want to work with non-ideal clients going forward, but you may just acknowledge that you need what Bill Bachrach calls survival clients. So yeah, maybe it's a goal to only invite individuals that meet your ideal client profile into your ideal client community going forward. But for now, you need the revenue. And so you may make a decision that for at least a little while here, you're going to accept non-ideal clients. Bill Bachrach calls them survival clients. But so what's option A? Option A, and I'm just showing you hypothetically here. If you have questions on this, we can go into this a lot more detail. But, you know, here's a standard option A. This is your ideal client offer. If we invite you into our ideal client community, and emphasis on the if. So if someone doesn't meet your ideal client community, forgive me, your ideal client profile, they'll never hear this. They'll never see this option A because you're never going to invite them in because they don't meet your profile. So you need to have a mindset that you're only going to invite clients into your ideal client community if they meet your profile. Okay, so if they do, then you invite them in and you explain, my team and I are going to coordinate all of your personal financial affairs so that you don't have to. The value being saving time. And we're going to provide oversight so that you receive truly comprehensive financial services. And we're going to make an advisor pact with you. We're going to protect you. We're going to pay attention. We're going to coordinate not only the financial people in your life, but all the recommendations that are made to you so that they are well aligned with your overarching strategy and transparent. We're going to identify potential conflicts and make sure that it's fully transparent what you're paying for all your financial products and services. Our job is to protect you against those people out there, professionals who would attempt to sell you financial products and services. So we provide oversight and we make a pact to protect you. And for that, we charge whatever your compensation is. Okay. Let's say $35,000 per year for that. But if an individual does not meet the ideal client profile, you only have one other way to work with clients. This is what I'm proposing, a starkly contrasted, you know, we only have two ways to work with clients, option A and option B. Option A is if you meet the ideal client profile. Option B is if you don't or if you can't make up your mind. So our team will invest whatever amount of time it takes to create this, but let's say between 90 and 120 days, our team invests 120 days to establish your comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So we'll start the same way we would if you were an ideal client. We're going to sit down and establish a long-term lifetime strategy for you. In other words, the term I never use with potential clients or clients is financial plan. So this is in essence what you might be thinking of as a financial plan. But I never call it that because financial plan is one of these imprecise terms that doesn't, it means different things to different people and clients aren't clear what it is and what's the benefits. So I recommend that you call this thing, rather than calling it a financial plan, that you call it a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, which you'll notice over time, that's the terminology that I always use so that clients understand what we're talking about, or potential clients in this case. So, okay, so we're going to establish your written lifetime financial strategy. Then we're going to provide you with a step-by-step implementation plan of action. So after we put the comprehensive lifetime financial strategy in place, after we establish it, you're going to, the kind of the work product is a simple checklist, a step-by-step checklist of things that need to happen, not just now, but if we can identify action items all the way out to the end of your life, we will note the year in which that recommendation is relevant. And so we're going to give you a comprehensive step-by-step plan of action comprised of action items and recommendations for everything you need to do to implement this lifetime strategy. We're going to give you that checklist. And then we're going to give the whole thing to you to implement. So rather than us implementing it, we're going to give it to you to implement. And for that, we'll charge a fee. Let's just say $10,000 one-time fee. You can charge whatever you want, but something that's going to be, a lesser fee, something that... the main thing is you don't want to make promises for future entanglements. You don't want to make commitments for ongoing servicing in the future. So the whole point is to avoid that. And that's why you have option A, ongoing service, option B, one time. So you're saying, but Mark, what if they have things in their financial affairs where we could make a profit and it would actually benefit them? I'm saying that's fine. all these other ways you could work with a client could come up in the process of this, let's call it 120 days while you're establishing this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. If you see a financial product or if you see a financial service that is not appropriate for this client and you have accessibility to something where you can fix that for them, well, then have at it. You know, nothing stopping you after they've hired you to create this lifetime strategy from coming in with additional recommendations. But it is you'll grow your business more quickly, and it'll be clearer to clients what you do if you just limit the offers to a maximum of two starkly contrasted black and white offers. And I told you, I promised you I would show you an ideal client profile. So here's an ideal client profile, a sample that we provide on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, but I know you don't have access to the toolkit, so I thought I would show it to you here. Let's just actually focus on the profile itself. So the very first item, the client we serve best is financial delegator. So I think all of you will be well served by making sure that your ideal client profile includes financial delegators. And then there's a bunch of things that you have discovered about your best clients that they have to have in place as a profile for you to enjoy working with them. And I'm encouraging you to identify and profile your top three clients that you enjoy working with the most and identify what those are. For me, I couldn't work with a client that wasn't passionate about their goals, so I added that. And I couldn't stand working with clients that liked overly complex things. They wanted to have three retirement accounts at three different institutions when, in my view, it should be just one retirement account in one institution. So I like clients that enjoy simplicity. I'm encouraging you to go through that kind of mental checklist like that and to include on your ideal client profile the things that you enjoy about clients, and always include a financial component. So you need to make sure that the clients who don't have enough money aren't embarrassed when they come in and sit down with you, only to realize that you work with clients only at a certain level. So you need to make sure to include in your ideal client profile a financial component which ties directly to your compensation, so that clients who fit that profile are going to read that and say, yeah, that's me, no big deal, and they'll move on to the next bullet point and keep reading. They'll self-select. And clients who don't meet the profile, they'll know right away that they're not, you know, they're not going to meet the profile. And that will accelerate the growth of your business. Okay, next question. It's 44 minutes past the hour, so we're almost at the end of our scheduled time. But as always, I'm going to keep rolling here and continue going through this content. So if you have to leave right now, go ahead. I know you're busy. You have calendar commitments. Go ahead and do that. When the replay of this session goes live for you, and you'll get a notification when it goes live, just come back and listen to on the player. Just click on this question on the player, and the video will move magically forward to this point in the session, and you can just pick up where you left off. So the next question is, I just hired a new administrative manager. How would you suggest that I describe to a new employee what our mission is, and how should I describe exactly what it is that we do? So, and how do I describe the role of the administrative manager to this new person? Well, here's the mission. Here's what I think our purpose is. This is what our team agrees that we're all trying to do here. And I would make sure that your entire team is on track to this. The mission is to create an extraordinary client experience while getting your ideal client's financial house in perfect order and, of course, keeping it that way forever. So it's up to you and your team to describe and to establish what that client experience is, but that's the challenge. So everyone on your team, including your administrative manager coordinating things, each subject matter expert, you as the advisor who are orchestrating the client meetings, it's up to all of you to sit down and establish what's going to smooth out this client experience, what's going to make this experience extraordinary for the client. And I'll give you a hint. It's making their list of action items or their to-do list, whatever you want to call it, smaller. So, you know, what clients are actually very simple when it comes right down to it. They want an advisor and a team who are thoroughly capable and competent. In other words, they're up to the task. So, and secondly, they want an advisor that's worthy of trust. So I've talked to many potential ideal clients out there and who have said, in essence, if I could only find an advisor who's competent and worthy of trust, I would hand over everything to them financially. And so that's your challenge. You and your team need to figure out what's going to make our clients' life easier, what's going to make our clients' to-do list smaller. Yet, we're thoroughly competent and capable enough. We know what needs to get done, and we'll, as much as possible, make sure that it gets done, and which is a whole different concept from doing everything. So it's not your job to do everything for your clients, but it is your job to make sure it gets done, and to the extent that you can take it off the client's list and just make their overall experience extraordinary, that's the mission. And that includes the experience they have when they drive up to your office, the experience they have when they walk into your office, the experience they have when they sit down with the advisor and the meetings are crisp and full and coherent and they're focused, they're on topic, the meetings are dealing with issues that are very important in the client's mind, and all the things that are not important to the client are ditched. You know, and so there's so many things that you don't do in a client meeting. And then post-meeting follow-up, your subject matter experts following up on every single recommendation that was made in the meeting. And, you know, you've got 4 months in the three-meeting process, so you've got 16 weeks post-meeting follow-up for your team to make sure everything gets done. So all of this is up to your team. The mission is to create an extraordinary client experience around all of this. And to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So, you know, we were talking earlier, this is specific written deliverables. Your client is clearly understanding what it is they're supposed to receive for what they're paying for you. And, you know, and to make sure, you know, that we're talking about the administrative manager specifically here, but just ensuring overall your team's job and your job as an advisor is to make sure everything that should be happening is actually happening. And in each of these areas of financial, personal finance that we've been talking about. So even if you don't have your team in place, it doesn't prevent you from making sure that everything that should be getting done in each of these areas is happening. So you establish a list of things that should happen, and then you just make sure all that stuff happens, whether it's by your team or just working with the client and their own existing professionals to make sure everything on the list gets done. So what's different about what you're providing versus every other financial advisor out there that this client could work with? Well, if you implement it the way we teach, you have a financial services monopoly. I think the mindset here is there is no other advisor in your community that this advisor could work with to do what you do. And there are 5 specific gaps that we find in nearly every potential affluent ideal client's life before we begin working with them. And so what are those 5 things that are that are gaps that we're filling that are not in place typically when we get involved in a situation with a client, a new relationship? First of all, very few clients come in with any kind of a strategy in place. So this idea of creating an overarching strategy, a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy as a very first step, that's different. I don't recall ever having an ideal client, I don't care how many millions of dollars they had, where they come in the first meeting and say, here's the strategy that we live by day, week by week, month by month. I have had clients saying, hey, 6 months ago, I had a financial plan completed and they dumped this document on my plate where they may have done a few action items, but it's not what you would call an ongoing overarching strategy, which gives guidance to every subject matter expert working with the client, you know, their accountant, their money managers, their estate planning lawyer, and so forth. You know, these people of the team have never seen this financial plan. So what's different? We're going to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, and every person on the team and every recommendation coming from those people are going to be in perfect alignment with that strategy going forward. So what's different is most of it has to do with going forward. The second thing that's different is we have a team of subject matter experts. We have a team. So we acknowledge that every client that comes in to work with us, they have financial people in their life. They have typically an accountant. They've got an estate planning lawyer who may have created wills and trusts some time ago. They typically have somebody managing money, whether it's mutual funds or a private money manager, whatever. They certainly have insurance agents. What they don't have is a team of subject matter experts to provide oversight over that team, to make sure the team is looking at the overarching strategy and making recommendations in alignment. So, but just simply put, what's different is we're not just some financial planner, you know, working in our basement cranking out financial plans, and we're not just some financial product salesman like in a big wirehouse selling financial products. We have a team led by you as the advisor, and your team actually collaborates with each other. So in a client's life, they have these financial people, the accountant, the lawyer, the money manager, the insurance agents, but those people never talk to each other. I've never encountered a situation where there's a functional team in place that actually collaborates with each other. So we fixed that. Clients that work with us, we have a team, and our team makes sure that everybody else on the team collaborates with each other on the client's financial issues. The other thing that's different is peer review. Our team reviews each other's work, and this is an important part of what differentiates your service and my service from every other financial advisor out there. Who reviews the work? So the client has an accountant, whoever reviews that work. A client has an estate planning lawyer who creates wills and trusts, whoever reviews any of that. The money management, whoever questions the money manager as to whether that's the correct and appropriate asset allocation and individual investments. You know, the one of the things that's very different about our environment is our team is an oversight team and reviews each other's work. That has never happened. I've never seen that in a client coming into our office where they already had that in place. And so this whole idea of oversight, the idea that we're going to ensure everything's in alignment, this concept of oversight is really a big one as far as what differentiates what we do versus what a client could find from another advisor in their services. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that none of these five things are available to the client anywhere else in the community. If they want to have truly comprehensive financial services, have a team coordinating their personal financial affairs, and have these things in place, you know, that there's a strategy, that there's a team collaborating, reviewing the work before the client sees it, and providing oversight over everything. This is just not available anywhere else at any price to clients. They have to come to you for this. And then this whole idea of making an advisor pact with a client, that on top of all of that, you have a commitment. Everyone on your team is committing to the client, and this is part of the oversight role. You know, so what are we doing in oversight? Well, who's got your back, Mr. Client? You've got these financial people in your life, accountants and lawyers and money managers and insurance agents. Who's looking at all that and actually protecting you, protecting your financial strategy, protecting your financial assets, questioning things? We've got your back. Who's paying attention? So, Mr. Client, Mrs. Client, your circumstances change over time. You have things come up that alter your financial future. So which of your financial people in your life is paying close attention enough to make the necessary course corrections when the time comes? That's your commitment. You're going to do that. That's different. That, you know, that's something that clients complain they can't find anywhere at any price, is a financial advisor who's going to truly pay attention and make recommendations and course corrections in real time. and coordination, as we've talked about several times today, the coordinating not only the people that are in the client's financial life, but the recommendations to make sure they're well aligned with the overarching strategy. And then finally, transparency. You're going to make sure that all potential conflicts of interest are identified and disclosed, and you're going to make sure that it's fully transparent and that clients understand exactly what they're paying for every financial product and service in their life. So these are things that if you talk to the affluent and they're being candid with you, these are the four things that they claim they can't find anywhere. So this is what you're going to explain to clients. You're making a pact. So what is the administrative manager's role? I think when you think administrative manager, you put the emphasis on the term administrative. So I talk to advisors all day long. That's what I do now. I'm talking to advisors on how to increase the success of the growing of their business and the delivering of truly comprehensive financial services to ideal clients. And I'll hear an advisor say, my administrative manager is excellent. My administrative manager is superb. My administrative manager has coordinated the administrative side of my office very, very well. And so the emphasis is on the word administrative. Well, I would propose that externally, the title is administrative manager, that when your clients see it on the business card of your administrative manager, this title administrative manager, that's very clear to the client. So they understand what this individual does. They're the administrative manager. But I want to emphasize the second word. This is the more accurate, or this is the more active word that I want you to, we kind of assume that your administrative manager is very strong administratively. It's almost like a given. So we assume that's in place. The key that we want you to focus on is the word manager. And I would say that manager title, that implies that you're coordinating varying elements. So you're coordinating people, you're coordinating checklists and making sure things are getting done. It's managing things. So what you're needing to explain to your administrative manager that their role is the manager aspect of this. And what you're looking for them internally, what we call our administrative manager, is the project leader. So it's got to be somebody's job on your team who gets up every day and makes sure that truly comprehensive financial services is getting implemented, and that there's forward progress, and that the whole project of delivering an extraordinary client experience and getting a client's financial house in order and keeping it that way forever, this all involves everyone on your growing team, as you add subject matter experts, understanding what they're supposed to be doing and when they're supposed to be doing it. And of course, when the clients come in, everything's got to be perfect. You have to have all the meeting prep fully prepared. It's got to be in excellent quality. You know, that no mistakes, no careless errors. That internally is a project leader. So emphasis on the word leader. I think what you need to be explaining to your administrative manager is you are the project leader, emphasis on the word leader. So let's talk about, this is in the interviewing process. So let's talk about times in your life as you look back on your accomplishments. Where have you shown leadership skills? Where have you had to coordinate people? Where have you had to coordinate resources? Where have you had to make sure that that a project keeps moving forward and doesn't stall out? So this is what I think you need to explain to the administrative manager about their role. If I were to boil it down to five bullet points, I would say the administrative manager as project leader serves as a point of contact both for ideal clients and for your team. So this is the hub. This is the individual that is the point of contact for everyone, and that this project leader as administrative manager is responsible for implementing truly comprehensive financial services. Not the administrative manager directly, because oftentimes this individual sometimes doesn't even have experience in the financial services industry, and it's not necessary. But as you add subject matter experts in the area of tax and estate planning and financial planning and money management and insurance, it's up to this person, the administrative manager, to ensure forward movement, that that this implementation of truly comprehensive financial services is being defined clearly by the subject matter experts, and that if any gaps in the service or any lack of implementation of truly comprehensive financial services as your team defines it, you know, it's up to the administrative manager to ensure that there's forward movement every single week in implementing this concept that we're calling truly comprehensive financial services. It's the job as the administrative manager, as project leader, to coordinate the team, to coordinate all the client meetings, and I think, and this is a big one, it's to serve as the communications hub. That all information and documents related to a client flows through the administrative manager. And when the administrative manager gains possession of some client information or a client document, the administrative manager, as project leader, figures out a way to promptly make all that information available to everyone on your team, all the subject matter experts. So these, if I had to boil it down to five things, these are the five things. Think about priorities for a minute. So everybody on your team has their priorities. So it's I have often thought that when I look at a successful team, that what's happening here is the team really understands their priorities. And so I would encourage you, as you're explaining to your administrative manager what their role is, that as project leader, it's important for them to not only be aware of, but keep the team focused on their priorities. So let's go through it. Trusted advisor. What's the trusted advisor's priorities? It's to be face-to-face or on the phone with ideal clients, delivering an extraordinary client experience. This is the role of the advisor. And to be face-to-face and on the phone with potential clients, same thing. So it's the advisors out front. The advisor's not sitting in front of a computer. The advisor often is not even in the office if they're focused on their priorities. I like to think of this in terms of 80-20. 80% of an advisor's time should be face-to-face or on the phone with either clients or potential clients. And oh, by the way, if you don't have many ideal clients currently, then the time shifts over to potential clients. I often share, and I'd be happy to if anybody ever asked about it in one of these sessions, go through my own numbers. When I was acquiring ideal clients, you know, how many interactions did I have face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients? And how many interactions did I have face-to-face or on the phone with potential, with ideal clients? So if you have just a few ideal clients, then you could be investing quite literally 15 or 20 hours a week face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. But that just means you can't get bogged down with this implementing of comprehensive financial services, or, you know, building and leading your team and helping your team do their job, helping with all the administrative tasks in the office. It's really up to the team to do that. And the advisor should be only spending 20% or less of your time dealing with that. These are your priorities, these two things. Subject matter experts, so then what's their priority? Well, it's up to them to deliver this truly comprehensive financial services. That's why it's important for you as an advisor to invest that 20% of your week going out and seeking out skilled subject matter experts who know what they're doing. Once you've invited your subject matter experts on the team, it's up to them to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. And as we mentioned before, it's up to them to establish what comprehensive financial services actually even means. So more on that in the weeks and months ahead. But for now, let's just say it's up to your financial subject matter experts to deliver the service and to come up with what the service is and to collaborate with the other subject matter experts and to review each other's work. These are the priorities of the subject matter experts, which means the advisor should not be spending, you know, only 20% of their time would we recommend the trusted advisor invest in this part of it. Let the subject matter experts come up with, do these three things. And then, therefore, what is the administrative manager's priorities? I would say protect the trusted advisor's time. That if the trusted advisor is going to spend, if you're going to spend 80% of your time doing these two activities, face-to-face or on the phone with either ideal clients or potential clients, you need your administrative manager to protect your time and to be aware that that's the goal as far as priorities, and to protect your time to literally take everything else off your plate as much as possible, and to coordinate the subject matter experts and to ensure everything gets done before a client progress meeting. So these are the priorities. And I would say, just to finish this up, you need to develop key performance measures for subject matter experts and your administrative manager. So we recommend and advise you to sit down as a trusted advisor and have meetings with all your direct reports. That would be mainly your administrative manager and your subject matter experts. That's to sit down 3 times a year, once every 4 months, just like you do with clients, but to review the key performance measures. What are the key things that are evidence that your people that report to you, your subject matter experts and your administrative manager, are actually successfully and effectively managing their priorities? So I'll show you an example. This is the administrative manager key performance measures report off the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, but I'm showing you this just simply to point out that you need to have key performance measures for everyone on your team. And if ever you want to ask a question here on the monthly session about how to create key performance measures, we can certainly address it later. But the point is, this is something that you need to sit down with your team with on a regular basis and make sure that everybody's making progress on their key performance measures and effectively managing their priorities, and that you see that there's evidence of forward progress in, you know, in their work. Final question. It's 8 minutes after the hour. I'll try to fly through this as quickly as possible. I used to work at a wirehouse firm. As a financial advisor, we were required to track our daily activities. What internal activities do you recommend that we track? I'm going to hop over to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, and I'm going to show you what we have. There are many things you can track. If you're like, for example, in Bill Bachrach's Committed Advisor Program, there are something on the order of 35 activities that a financial advisor needs to track in order to be on top of your business and to make sure that you're setting up, that you're successful in setting up an environment where you're going to grow your business effectively. But I would say on the toolkit, what we focus on is the administrative manager, and what should the administrative manager be tracking. And we have something that we call the Potential Client Interaction Tracker. It's an app. So I'm going to walk you through the app, because I know that you can recreate this somehow. You can use this concept and you can track these 4 things manually. I mean, you don't need our app to do this. The app just makes it easier, but you can certainly track these things on your own. And I think your administrative manager should be tasked with making sure that these things happen. And so you may decide as an advisor that you're going to track these 4 things that I'm about to describe for you yourself. Nevertheless, even if you're the one doing the tracking, your administrative manager should still, in my opinion, be tasked with making sure that this gets done, because you have other things on your plate. And in most offices, I think the administrative manager actually does track this for the advisor. I think it's way over half. I think it's something closer to 85 or 90% of offices have the administrative manager tracking these things. So the question is, of those 35 daily activities that Bill Bachrach thinks an advisor should be tracking, what we've done here is we've said, here are the 4 essential elements. So of those 35 things, here are the 4 things that need to be focused upon in the office, and your administrative manager needs to be aware of these 4 things, just to see if we're on track or not, because it's the administrative manager's job to protect your time. So if you're not meeting your objectives with these 4 things, then it's up to your administrative manager to get involved and start, you know, cleaning up your calendar and removing distractions. And, you know, this is the priority. So let me run through it real quick. So you need to be tracking what we call potential client interaction time. So it's defined down lower on the app, but PCI time is very simple. It's that time, it's the time that the trusted advisor invests face to face or on the phone with potential clients for the purpose of moving towards or initiating an initial client interview in the office. And of course, the initial client interview in the office itself is potential client interaction time. So of all the 35 elements that Bill Bachrach has advisors track, I believe that the most important thing that needs to be tracked is the number of minutes invested by an advisor actually face-to-face or on the phone with a potential client. Notice I don't say potential ideal client, because many times you don't know for sure whether an individual or a family meets your ideal client profile until they actually sit down in an initial client interview with you. So if you spent 85% or 80% of your week kind of going back to the 80-20 that I was talking about earlier, then, you know, you do the math. What's, if you're working a 40-hour week, what's 80% of 40 hours? But in this hypothetical, as you can see, the system is saying that this particular advisor has invested 7.6 hours on a 7-day rolling basis, looking backward, interacting with potential clients. So on a daily basis, and on the app, what the administrative manager makes sure gets tracked daily is the number of minutes interacting with potential clients every day. And so if you look back a week, this advisor has interacted with potential clients 7.6 hours. Now, down below, you see the goal. That's very important. So your administrative manager needs to know two things. They need to know the amount of time in minutes that you are interacting face-to-face or on the phone with a potential client, and they also need to know the goal. So if we're doing it according to the 80-20, let's just pull up the little calculator here. So 40 hours a week times 0.8, like when I was doing this, it was like 30 hours, 32 hours a week, I should be face-to-face or on the phone with potential ideal clients. Why? Because I didn't have many ideal clients. I mean, back at the beginning, I had 17 ideal clients. And so I didn't have, you know, that's not many clients. And so I invested most of this 32 hours a week, not with ideal clients, but with going out and face-to-face and on the phone talking to potential clients, trying to schedule initial client interviews. So the point is, what you track is that potential client interaction time and what the goal should be. Second thing that we have that we track on the toolkit that you can track individually is the actual referrals that are received. So we say, you know, we have on the app a way for the advisor or the administrative manager to add a name and a date. It's really just a very easy process. They put in the date that they received the referral and the name of the referral. And so we have received 10 referrals in the last 7 days, according to this tracking. And so then what's the goal? 10. So if the goal is 10 and you receive 10, now the administrative manager is very dialed in to what's going on here. The advisor in this hypothetical office has a goal of investing 7 hours with potential clients every week, and they have exceeded the goal in the last 7 rolling days. And over the last 7 rolling days, the goal has been to receive 10 referrals. There they are. There are the names of the 10 referrals off in the sidebar here. So what's the opportunity for the administrative manager? It's just to close a loop and to make sure that the administrative manager knows that a referral has been received and to help the advisor ensure prompt follow-up. We can talk about these topics in future sessions, but there should be a process in place, a documented process for managing and dealing with potential clients, like referrals that come in. And so it's important that these referrals be followed up with promptly, and by requiring that the name be entered, now the administrative manager is in possession of the name, understands that this individual is a referral, and can help follow the process to promptly follow up with all referrals, so that the client experience, even the potential client experience, is extraordinary. The other thing you should track is how many initial client interviews are scheduled looking. Now, this is shifting to looking forward. So as you can see down below, the goal is 2 initial client interviews with, that's in the office, both spouses, they bring all their documents. This is actually tracked automatically in the toolkit. So those 2 preceding things we talked about are the only things you have to actually track in the toolkit. The toolkit itself automatically tracks these last 2 things. But you need to focus on this, like how many initial client interviews are scheduled in the next week, and how many should it be? So it's important discipline for the administrative manager to sit down with the trusted advisor and say, how many new clients do you need to actually meet with in the office every week in order to be on track to your goals? Now, this may lead to the advisor having to kind of go away and figure out their goals, or maybe not. But the point is, it needs to be tracked. How many initial client interviews are the goal, and how many are actually scheduled in the next week? And then the last column here, just before we move on too much, this how many ideal clients have been added over the last 90 days. The goal here is 3. We've added 5. So that's the full complement of the 4 things to track. The PCI time, potential client interaction time, the name and the number of referrals over the last week, the number of ideal client, the number of initial client interviews for the next week, and what's the goal, and what are the number of ideal clients that we've added in the last quarter. And so, and then for all of these to establish what should it be, what are the goals. So that's what we have them track. I do make a point down here on the app. We have in the week looking forward at next week, we have administrative managers let the app know if the advisor is going to be off next week, any days. Like this week in the U.S., we had President's Day. So, but it's the obligation of the administrative manager to say, well, if the goal is 7 hours a week, perhaps in a week when the advisor's not in the office, we give them a break. We're not going to require, the 7 rolling days is not going to include holidays. So we have, by default, have Saturday and Sunday off, which the administrative manager can uncheck that. And then you see down here, yes, the trusted advisor was updated. We feel strongly that the administrative manager should have a conversation with the advisor at least once a week, telling them, here are your numbers. The goal was 7 hours of potential client interaction time. You actually invested 7.6, so you're on track for that. Your goal was 10 referrals. You received 10 referrals, so you're on track for that. Your goal was 2 initial client interviews for next week. There's only 1 scheduled, so you're not on track for that. And then the goal is 3 ideal clients to be added over the last every 90 days, and we've actually acquired 5, so we're over goal on that. So I think that's what I think you should track. I think these are the 4 things. If you track these 4 things, these are the 4 most important things. I'll say it one other way, and then we'll close for today. I think if those are the only 4 things you track, I think that's enough. I think that will ensure a business that's growing and that you're focusing on, especially the trusted advisor is focusing on their priorities. So that's it for this week's monthly session. It's 19 minutes after the hour. That means that we went, almost an hour and a half. But be that as it may, we wish you all the best in implementing. Submit your questions for next month. We'll select a few to cover that we think will benefit the most people. And until then, I'm Mark Little.